Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Write on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delsheree Gladden. I'm an author of over 30 published novels. And on this week's episode, I have Andrea Millinson Penner. And we're going to be talking about her most recent book of poetry, as well as everything else she's doing. The book is called Rabbit Sun, Lotus Moon. Andrea, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks, Delsheree. I'm Andrea Penner, and I also go by Andy. I taught at San Juan College in the English department probably for about 7 years, and I taught everything from basic writing to women's lit, Native American lit, the whole gamut there, and technical writing. And I left there in 2011, came back down to Albuquerque. I published a book in 2012, and that one was called When East Was North. And then in 2017, I published Rabbit Sun, Lotus Moon. And it's coming up on several years old, but it is the most recent book. And I was there at the Farmington Library not too long ago at their Author's Day and doing a reading out in Aztec that same weekend. I think it was Veterans Day weekend. That's when I met you, and I'm just happy to talk about my work.
Well, I am glad to have you, and I'm glad I got a chance to read it. It's been a really fun part of doing this show to explore other genres, because poetry is not something I do. It's one of those forms of writing that I'm like, this just doesn't really make sense to me in like putting it together in so few words. It's a tough one for me.
Yeah, it is for many people.
One of the things that I've really enjoyed so much about getting to read more poetry is seeing the differences and the variation in style and how people approach poetry and the themes and topics that are covered by individual poets. And I wanted to start off asking you about the preface in the book, because that was fun. Yeah. I don't see that very often. You really kind of give the reader this wonderful introduction to who you are and where some of your inspiration for your writing comes from. And you talk about some of the themes, some of the direct inspiration, as well as talking about your relationship with your sister. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about just how you approach poetry and where your ideas and your inspiration come from in this and in what you're doing now. And has that changed over time?
Okay. I'm glad you read the preface. It's definitely addressed to dear reader, and I don't always do a dear reader preface in my publications, but this one just seemed to call for it, like it needed a context. And as it happened, when I was thinking about how I wanted to introduce the book, I had a conversation with my sister who lives in Australia. She's been there since 1970 something. and I've been to visit a couple times, but she's made her life there. And there have been years that we didn't see each other. Like 10 years, I think, was the longest we went without contact, but without actually being in the same room together. So all of our relationships, so much of it has taken place through writing long letters. And it just happened that while I was getting this book ready to go out, I talked to her on the phone and she said, I love the drafts of poems that you sent me. And I'm always looking for little clues about you in your writing. So I had that conversation with her and then I went for a long walk thinking about the preface. And it just came to me that she was the perfect context for this book, because so much of what I do is in writing. And, she goes on her daily walks on the beach, and I go for my daily walks in the foothills, and we're always thinking about each other, but not always in communication. And it just struck me that this book was a continuation of our decades of letter writing. So I decided to write the reader a letter to bring you into the book and into that relationship. And a lot of the poems do come from when I'm walking. And I don't always write rhyming verse, but some of my shorter poems that do have some rhyme really come out of walking, because I don't have a pen and paper. I don't take my cell phone to dictate. I'm just walking and thinking in my head. So it's a lot easier to come home and write down a poem if I've been repeating the lines over and over to myself. And I was just looking for one of those, but I can't find it. Oh, yes, I found it. Can I read one of those?
Please, yes.
Okay, so this one is on page 33 in the book. It's called Bury Me Under the Chocolate Flower. And I first learned about chocolate flower up in Farmington, and then I was excited to have them in my neighborhood when I came to Albuquerque. Bury me under the chocolate flower, scatter me to the sea, lower me into loamy earth covered with aspen leaves, sift me with the sand of a southern shore, float me on a twig in the creek, hold me up to the Arctic wind blowing down from the highest peak, and I'll find my way to the midnight sky, to silence between the stars. With my arms encircling the galaxies, the universe expanding my heart. So bury me under the chocolate flower, scatter me to the sea, release me in a river's meander, let me choose my eternity.
Thank you for sharing that. It's such a visual poem in a lot of ways, and it reminded me of, I used to run, I don't anymore, because my ankle can't handle it, but it reminded me of that experience of being out in the quiet and the solitude of just you and nature, and that chance to actually observe without other distractions. And I think that's such a rare moment for a lot of us to not have everything else going on around you and being interrupted or having the technology to just observe and see what's around you and really invest yourself in being in that moment.
It is. And I feel like that's where a lot of my poetry comes from those smaller moments. I also have poetry that comes from larger moments. And I have a couple of new things. You caught me on a really exciting day because I just heard from a literary publication that they've accepted two of my poems. They'll be coming out on January 20th. And these are new poems, so I can't read those to you because they haven't been published yet. But this is a journal called Sky Island Journal that publishes only about 3% of all the submissions they receive. So I'm feeling really excited and honored that they're going to publish two of my poems. And one of them is about my stepmother, who was born in Hiroshima, Japan. And I knew her for many, many years. She's no longer living now, but I don't know how much time we have. But I have another poem about her Japan that I would like to read if we have the time.
Absolutely, yes.
This is a found poem. And that means that all of the words come from another source. So these words come from a book called Japan, An Interpretation. And it was published in 1905. And I have a little explanation of the poem that I think will set it into context so that you understand how I selected these words from an entire book. I purchased this volume at a used bookstore. My Japanese stepmother was born and orphaned in Hiroshima Prefecture 15 years before we dropped the bomb. In her early 20s, she emigrated to North America. For this poem, I looked for cultural context clues that would explain some of her attitudes and actions as she approached age 19. I read the introduction and followed the index and chapter titles related to women and family. Those sections yielded the selected words and phrases in this poem. Hearn relies more on impressions than facts. Such language lent itself to several internal and slant rhymes. I also played with scope from an individual, single toy, spring day, a barren wife, individual pain, to the universal, the living and the dead, a thousand years, and the great social tree. Twice I added the word her to acknowledge that to find the poem, I focused narrowly on understanding my stepmom's bearing, beliefs, and behaviors. In that sense, the poem is simply, as Hearn would say, an attempt to understand. So that's a background about the poem. My stepmother's name was Shigeo, so I'd like to read this in honor of her. It's called Her Japan. Language of the unlettered, full of meaning, proverbs and household phrases, the songs of the street, the speech of the workshop, the image on a boy's kite or a girl's battledore, every kind of decoration, first impressions, Japan seen in the white sunshine of a perfect spring day. You will never forget the dream, never. Thousands of years remain unchanged. The dead remain in this world. Welfare of the living depends on welfare of the dead. Goddess of rice pot, forms of servitude, a wife that proved barren might be divorced. Common for bereaved wife to perform suicide, religion of loyalty, to follow her husband into the other world, to wait upon him as in life, fact and myth, interwoven, difficult to distinguish obedience, affectionate submission, emigrant community, communal coercion in Canada, Hawaii, collective opinion, the thinking of all is the thinking of one. Woman cultivated by home training, silence and softness, and hostility render it all the more alarming. Great social tree, clipped, cared for, all are polite. Nobody quarrels. Everybody smiles in the teeth of pain. Pain and sorrow remain.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Not only a wonderful poem, but what an interesting approach to writing poetry. I have not had anyone talk to me about that so far. So I'm very intrigued about this.
It's definitely a genre called found poetry. And there are some journals that publish only found poetry. And this particular poem was published a few months ago in a journal, online journal called Neologism. And they're interested not just in found poetry, but kind of in wordplay. So it was a good fit for them. And it's a great creative writing assignment. And I'm guessing Travis Wade at San Juan College has probably given this kind of assignment before, where you find something intriguing, a document. It can be as mundane as a birth certificate, but sometimes there's really interesting things in old documents that you can turn into poetry. So it's just another way of looking at the world through somebody else's words.
I really am enjoying the idea of this. Next semester, my students were starting our narrative unit, but we're starting it with short stories. And I'm thinking this could be a really fun way for them to interact with the text even more, pay more attention to word choice and a way to express themselves a little bit more.
It gives you a starting point, gives your students a starting point. Instead of staring at the blank page, like write a poem related to this book or short story, you can actually say, give the prompt and use words directly from the pages of the book selectively. So it becomes your own work.
Love that. And like you said, it gives you a starting point something that I see with my young students, I teach freshmen, most of them are not terribly confident in their writing abilities. I think that's something that, especially through COVID and with where things tend to focus on grades and standards and everything, that writing, especially creative writing, is just not as big of a piece of the puzzle. And trying to get them to feel more confident in expressing themselves is really challenging with a lot of them. And I like that this gives them a body of work to look at, to start with for their inspiration, and that they can pick out what stands out to them, what they find meaning in, or what connects with their ideas. Fun way to approach this.
Good. I'm glad I could offer that to you and to your audience listening. I mean, it's just a fun way. The next time you open a technical manual or a Rose catalog or something, you know, you just look at it through the lens of poetry and things stand out to you in a different way.
Well, and that's something with poetry that I've really enjoyed learning more about is just that shift in perspective. Because you're not looking at something and saying, you know, how can I turn this into a story? Or how can I explain this? You're just looking at that moment or that idea or theme, whatever it is that kind of inspired those words. You can focus in on that specifically without trying to turn it into something else or something bigger or anything like that. Like, it can be that particular thing that you experienced or thought about or focused on. And that's another one of those things that I feel like a lot of times we're so busy and we're so focused on the overall thing or the big picture or getting the next thing done that to stop and take that time to just investigate those small things, that experience on your walk or an idea that occurred to you and you want to just spend a little bit of time digging into it. How often do most of us take the time to really do that?
Yeah. And it doesn't take long either. It's not like you have to do a sitting meditation for an hour or something. These things can happen just in a really quick moment. And when you said the word perspective, it reminded me of the one little poem in my book called Perspective that's only 5 lines long, and it's quoted on the back of the book as well. So I'd like to read that. And I can tell you it was from just a moment at probably about 12:30 a.m. I was coming back from an elder care trip to California, being with my dad and stepmom. And my flight was delayed, and I got in the car at the airport. And I saw the moon up in the sky on a very dark night, and it was a half moon. So this is the poem. Perspective. Unlike the infamous water glass, the moon is never half empty. So I'll read that one more time. Unlike the infamous water glass, the moon is never half empty.
I'm really glad you shared that one. It is such an interesting shift, and it makes you think about how we look at things, because when you're thinking about the water glass being half empty or half full, you're not thinking about the circular nature of wherever it's at, it's going to change, and then it's going to fill up, and it's going to be empty again, and that's going to fill up, and it's going to be empty again.
Right.
But we see that with things like the moon, where we're like, well, it's a phase, you know, it moves through it, it comes back around, we keep going, like, we don't have to put a static definition on it, because it's not static. But how many things do we look at in our lives as, well, it's this, or it's that, or, you know, something really definite. And so few things are ever that definite, you know, maybe inanimate objects, but anything that has any sort of purpose or function or phase to it, it's always going to be changing. And I like that reminder of looking for those phases, those uses of the various things in our life, and not putting those labels on it of, it's definitely this, because a few minutes from them, it's going to be something else.
Exactly, especially in New Mexico, if you're talking about weather.
Oh, yes. It's been all over the place. We were having 30-degree swings in temperatures this week, yes. And it's like, you know, bring three sweaters and then peel them off throughout the day.
Right, yeah, here in Albuquerque, too. And weather is another thing that you can find inspiration in, whether it's days and days of gray rain if you're living in the Pacific Northwest, or if it's 5 minutes of hail and 5 minutes of sunshine if you live in New Mexico. There's always something happening. The world is dynamic. And when it may seem like, oh, nothing's going on, you know, I'm so bored, there's always something that can be noticed and appreciated and written about.
Absolutely. I think taking the time to pay attention and notice those makes such a difference, I think, just in your overall attitude and how you approach your day and on many occasions.
Yeah, exactly.
There was one other poem that I was going to ask you about and see if you wanted to share with us. The world is not your size. This one struck me because it is talking about how you look at things, how you try to define them and relate to them, and just how tricky that really is. If you would like to read that, that would be wonderful. And then talk about it a little more.
I would love to. The world is not your size. Try as you might to make it fit, the world is not your size. Stand on your tiptoes to peer through a telescope at Andromeda, the Milky Way, or our neighborly moon. Hold out your arms, stretch your wingspan, imagine yourself an albatross gliding over a great ocean. Examine tiny organisms through a microscope. Marvel as the hairy little critters bump into one another. Scale the mountain in search of grandeur or insignificance. Squat on your heels to study the mysterious wildflowers thriving at 12,000 feet on the Colorado Plateau. These illuminated bottle brush blossoms resemble a distant galaxy, each crimson spine tipped with iridescent yellow, 100 worlds balanced in neat rows. How did they come to flourish in this unlikely place? How is it that you are here at all?
There was a couple reasons that this one struck me particularly. One of them was, it's probably been 15 or more years, driving the Alpine Loop up in Rocky Mountain National Park and just really being amazed by the hardy little tiny, low to the ground, beautiful plants and flowers up there that have such a short lifespan. They're only able to be seen and grow for a couple of months out of the year and then frozen the rest of the time. And that compared with, I just happened to come across this photo. I can't remember where I saw it or where it was posted, of microscopic chalk dust. And how pretty it is. Like, it was gorgeous. Oh, I was just like, I would put that in a frame and hang it on my wall. Like, they're really pretty.
Yeah.
And just
those
little things that you bypass or that you've never seen before that seem completely ordinary. But when you really take a magnified or a different look, you know, when you see it in a different way than you're used to seeing it, it changes how you think about it. And it makes you really consider, what exactly is that? It's not just dust. It's these itty bitty teeny particles that are together in these orbs that were so intricate to look at them under the microscope. And, you know, these little flowers that struggle so hard to survive for such a short period of time. And what a wonderful lesson that is, and just something to stop and take notice of that even if whatever it is that you're going through in your own personal life feels like it's lasting forever, not pleasant, or, you know, whatever it is, that those beautiful things that can still come from a struggle like that, and how much it can mean to other people. That most of us probably never really know, like, how we impact others or one thing that we might do might cause some effect somewhere else. But I think that that helps to stop and take notice of those small things and those just interactions or the things that we don't take notice of most of the time. And that poem was one of those that just made me stop and think a little bit more and just kind of reflect on the things that I had come across throughout the day and the interactions that I had.
Oh, thank you for sharing that response. Because, I mean, that is exactly what I was feeling at the moment, not when I wrote it, but when it happened. We were hiking up in the La Plata's or the San Juan's, and probably above 12,000 feet, and just these little tiny flowers and just being so amazed meeting them there and thinking, whoa, what are you doing up here? You know, and then thinking, what am I doing up here? I mean, it was just an amazing experience. So I'm glad I was able to capture it in a poem because I didn't take any pictures that day. So.
How much you can still keep that memory. I think we get so focused on the pictures and the posting and, you know, social media and all of that stuff and sharing every minute of our lives at times that it's become kind of a novel experience to just quietly take notice of your world around you and what you're doing and thinking and feeling. And what a wonderful moment to capture.
Yeah, it was. And that's what you've said too about social media and posting and photography and got to get it on the Instagram and whatever. All of that is wonderful and fun, but it puts us in a different headspace and we have a different appreciation. It's like we're appreciating things for their value as a photo rather than just for their intrinsic value as what an amazing meal I can enjoy whether I take a picture of it or not. And I think that's probably part of my aversion to taking pictures. I don't take a lot of them because I just feel like I'm enjoying the moment, watching whatever it is or smelling my food before I eat it or I don't know, just, you know, looking at nature, watching the clouds move instead of taking a picture and making them stop. So I hope people will think a little bit about that and maybe write a few lines instead of taking a photo.
I hope so too. Well, and we are already just about out of time, but I did want to ask you before we wrap up, what are your writing pursuits now and where can people find you to keep an eye on upcoming projects? Oh,
thank you. So I'm writing a newsletter. It's not exactly weekly, but it's more frequent than monthly. So I try to get it out once a week. And it is called In Our Own Ink. And that is not the address for it. So the address is all one word, Andy Penner, and that's ANDIPENNER .substack.com. Substack is just a platform, and it's where I host my In Our Own Ink newsletter. And that's a prose, sometimes poetry, other times, sometimes reflections on the world at large. Sometimes it's lessons learned about writing. And what I'm writing now is more poetry and sending it out for submission to literary journals. And I'm also working on a memoir. So that's my writing life at the moment, and I'm loving it.
Good. And how exciting that you're working on a memoir. You'll definitely have to keep me updated and let me know when and how it's going. That'd be great to hear more about.
Good. Thank you. I will.
Well, like I said, we are out of time. That went really fast, but yeah, it usually does. These are just too much fun. But just wanted to remind the readers that the book that we were talking about today is Rabbit Sun, Lotus Moon by Andrea Penner. And that's available pretty widely, right? It seemed like it was generally out and about.
It is out and about. It's, I think, Amy's Bookcase in Farmington might have a copy right now. There may be a copy in the San Juan College Library. Not sure about the public library. And then it's on Amazon, and it's also on Barnes & Noble. available on their website. And I'm sure there are probably some used copies floating around, and I would be delighted if they got sold and recirculated. So new or used, I think it's a good find.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed reading it and getting to just know a little bit more about you and your world and how you see things. So I hope people take a minute to go check it out.
Thanks, Dulcie. It was great to be here today.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.